You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. Welcome back to Happy Valley, where Penn State is now 8-0 since 0-5. Getting it done today with a 38-17 victory over Villanova. Not getting it done as emphatically as a lot of people would have liked and as emphatically as we anticipated with our predictions. I was at 52-10. I know Sean Fitz was, 49-7, somewhere in that range. And Mark, you'll have to remind me of your score. And if I have to remind our listeners, Mark Brennan, longtime Penn State analyst, joining us here. Sean, off on his adventure at the Ryder Cup in Wisconsin. He took the FCS opponent a little bit lightly. Maybe Penn State did too, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, it looks that way. I had it at 47-14, so I thought there would be more points scored by Penn State in this game. But, you know, Tyler, to me, the thing coming out of this game, and I'm not sure, what the TD take is on this one, but we had been making excuses and excuses for why the Penn State running game wasn't working, playing really good defenses, that sort of thing. And, all of a sudden, this is looking like a problem. I mean, it's still a top 10 team, obviously, right at number six going into this game. But sooner or later, and James Franklin said it afterward, they're going to have to be able to run the ball, and they just didn't do it. Now, with that said, they had a pretty good passing game. I mean, Sean Clifford was unbelievable yet again. And Dotson was tremendous. Washington was tremendous. But that ground game, picking up 80 yards, averaging, just over 2 yards a carry, that's not going to cut it moving forward. They really have to pick that up.
Yeah, I mean, when you imagine an offensive game against an FCS opponent, we talked a lot this week, Villanova, number 11 at that level. They're a playoff contender at that level, but they're competing against the number six team in the FBS. And so you kind of think, okay, explosive plays. You had that today. You had Jahan Dotson, Parker Washington, Keandre Lambert-Smith, a special day for all three of those wide receivers. Sean Clifford, as I referenced to you in the press box, the first quarterback in Penn State history to throw for 400 yards in America. Back in 2014 in Ireland, Christian Hackenberg went for 440 plus, I believe that was. This time, Clifford goes for 401, four touchdowns. He did throw an interception, his second on the season, second consecutive game. But overall, performance that in the passing game checked a lot of boxes. One thing that you can certainly leave from this performance wondering is, can Penn State pick it up? Because they've got a lot of tests coming. I'm not sure how good Indiana is this year. They're going to be significantly better than Villanova. I promise you that. They'll be on campus for a primetime game on Saturday night. Beyond that, of course, you've got trips to Iowa and Ohio State and Michigan State, and Michigan comes to town. This is no joke. Defensively, what you're going to see up front, it's pretty scary if you're not ready to handle it. We saw today that it was not coming together. That involved the tight ends who drew criticism from James Franklin after a really strong effort against Auburn. He specifically pointed them out in a negative light after the game, and a lot of that had to do with their blocking. The offensive line continues to kind of move pieces a little bit here and there, leave a lot to be desired from a run game perspective. And then you tie in the running backs. Let's not act like they're not at fault in any way, shape, or form here. You have not seen that dynamic ability from this running back group where they turned the smallest sliver of daylight into something special. There was only one carry today against an FCS opponent that went for double-digit yardage. At least that was late in the game. John Lovett had that 13-yard run. And you said to me, turned to me in the press box, is that as long as run, longest run for anybody? Yeah. And it was. I think it was the longest run for anybody about 5-6 yards. I wrote about this before we came on the podcast. No Noah Cain today. After the first couple possessions, he was on the field when Jahan Dotson caught a 52-yarder to start this game. Came back, one carry, 2 yards, on the sideline, in uniform. John Lovett looked the best pretty easily, I think, out of any running back we saw today. We saw six of them, but they're part of it. The tight ends are part of it. The offensive line is part of it. Mike Yurcich, his coaching staff, this is one of those things you got to sit down together and really wrap your head around this and effectively, quickly figure this out, whether that's a personnel move or a schematic standpoint.
Yeah, it was interesting because after the game, Tyler, I mean, you obviously were there. James Franklin proactively said they got to get better, running the ball. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, three of the first four questions were about the inability to run the ball. Now, one thing he said, and I think this is partially true, that early in the game, Penn State effectively used that short passing game as sort of a running game. We were sitting up in the press box, and I said, yes. Look, there's one defensive back on two receivers. Throw it there. It was right after Kane's first carry. So they throw it to Dotson, pick up six. Then they do it again, the exact same play.
With Brent Strange as his escort in the same right. spot. You were like, okay, again, yeah.
Doing it. So in their defense, that's what Villanova was willing to sacrifice. And this was another one of those games where if Penn State had wanted to, they could have passed for 700 yards, but no more in their defense. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you're playing that level of opponent, you can't let them dictate what you're going to do offensively. All right. It's one thing when you're playing a Wisconsin who didn't look that great today, by the way, I didn't see the game, or an Auburn who pulled out a game late. But when you're playing that level of team, and I was actually down near the tunnel, when Villanova went out on the field before the game, I was down near the photo room picking something up, and that's a very small team. I mean, when you watch a Power Five team run by you, even somebody as big and doofusy as me, you're kind of impressed by how big they are. That's a small Villanova team. Played very hard, played with a lot of courage, never gave up, got after it. But you have to be able to run the ball against that sort of team. And, you know, I think the other thing that James Franklin said afterward is that maybe Penn State was getting a little full of itself. Again, I'm paraphrasing. And so you put those things together, and that may be a little bit of an ideal situation in the sense that they're going into this Indiana game. This is going to be a tough week of practice. Because the coaches weren't happy with the running game, and I don't think they were happy with the all-around effort. I may be reading the wrong thing between the lines, but I think James Franklin was getting at, maybe they were getting a little too full of themselves, said they're going to have a real tough practice. They're going to get after it on Sunday because they practice hard on Sunday after they go through all their review of stuff. And I think this may serve them well in the sense that they didn't just walk over this opponent and absolutely destroy them, and now you don't have anything to really work on. They have a lot to work on this week, and they really have to get that running game down. And that offensive line has to pull together. They also gave up three sacks today. Now, granted, a couple of those, Clifford held onto the ball really long, but, I mean, that's a – you know, you say you have to give the other guy credit. Penn State's got to be able to dictate things against that level of team.
Yeah, and – we don't want this to sound like an airing of grievances. It's a 21-point victory. This team is a 4-0 record, but they put themselves very quickly in a position because of what they accomplished through 3 weeks to make a lot of people believe externally and internally. I can tell you that from all the player calls and the coaching conversations that I've had this week. They really think they're in this thing. And college football is in a funky spot this year where a lot of teams we think are going to be contending on an annual basis maybe will not be. Clemson is a perfect example. I know that I'm talking about January things right now when we're still in September, but that's where your head quickly goes to when all of a sudden you're the number six team in the country. And what James Franklin actually said, I'm going to read his words. You did a very good job of paraphrasing it, but here's what he said after the game. He said, I think they are getting patted on the back. I think they are reading articles, hopefully ours, and we're making sure that there's no leftovers of that come Sunday. I'm going to make sure we clear all those things out of the fridge. So if there's any of those leftovers from the Auburn matchup and the beautiful whiteout scenery and the 28-20 victory, yeah, that's just supposed to be viewed as a step on this long path toward getting to 12-0 through 12 consecutive 1-0s. Sounds like they got hung up a bit on that last particular 1-0, but they come away with a win here, and I think that is the big – if you're looking for, you know, why should I not be running toward the edge of the cliff and I believe in this Penn State team and they didn't look all that today. Listen, they got a win and they won by 21 points and it wasn't that close. It was 38-3 in the fourth quarter. And to your point, Mark, if he wanted to and if Mike Yurcich wanted to, Sean Clifford could have gone for 550, 600 yards today, a couple more touchdowns. But what concerns you, aside from the fact that their edge, their mentality was tested this week, what concerns you is in an FCS game, sure, that's great. You can go out, assert your will, 660 yards passing. But if they wanted to, if they truly wanted to, could this Penn State team have lined up against Villanova and ran the ball for 300, 400 yards today.
Yeah, and the point Franklin made, again, you know, without really being prompted, you're going to get into a situation in a four-minute drill at the end of a game where you're going to have to be able to run the ball, okay? So just passing it constantly isn't going to cut it. Now, again, having said all that, from the time Jahan Dotson caught that 52-yard pass for a touchdown, I don't think anybody got the sense that Penn State was in any danger.
Right.
But I think it's our responsibility to point out the things that really were glaring, that this team, again, if we're looking at this team as a top 10, top, you know, potentially top five team that could contend for all these things, the only way it's going to get there if it's able to run the ball. So I think that's why we'd lead with this, and I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there was a moment there early on in the second half, Mark. I think it was a minute in, it was seconds into the second half, where Tyler Will, a tight end for Villanova, went down the field, stayed down the field, and it got really quiet in Beaver Stadium, which is, it's hard to make a place like Beaver Stadium sound quiet. And it prolonged, and both teams were on their knees. Tyler Will was essentially strapped, you know, to the stretcher, put on a cart. And at that point, you're wondering what happens. Myself, I can't help but sort of think about Eric LeGrand personally. Thank God we found out he was okay, to the extent where he had movement across his body and he had awareness. Now, he had a concussion under continued observation. Aside from pointing out the fact that it seems like Tyler Will is going to be okay, I want to point out that moments later, there was that touchdown strike that made it 24-3, the 83-yard touchdown bomb to Keandre Lambert-Smith. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, how soon can you get to Taquan Roberson and Kobe King and maybe Landon Tangwall, who we didn't end up getting to see today. But I think at the end, ultimately, you just kind of said, okay, let's shift it into a different gear. Penn State just didn't quite deliver that blow offensively. They did it defensively. They held up just fine. I just think that when we look at the offense, it felt like a game, and it sure seems like a game where you need to be able to be a road grader team when you want to be. And I don't know if they could have been today, even if they wanted to be.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting late in the game, they tried Eric Wilson at center. Now, this is with the second team offensive line. Should we be reading anything into that? I wonder if maybe they're looking at potential personnel changes. Don't know. Probably a good question for Tuesday. Not sure if we'll get answers on that.
Right.
But I think the fact that you see a guy who hadn't played center, I mean, we saw Juice a couple games ago against Ball State. Juice Scruggs get in there and get some snaps at center. But I don't think they just throw Eric Wilson out there for the heck of it at center without something going through their heads, without thinking of some strategy behind it.
Yeah, I actually asked Eric, who we spoke with after the game, you know, when's the last time you played center in a game? And what hadn't been in college, it was back in high school. He said he was Harvard's emergency center. It never came to need him in that capacity. And lately, I'm not sure how long it's been going on. It made it sound like it's been pretty extended, but Troutwine has been working him in on the practice field to some capacity, getting some snaps at center. And to your point, seeing him there late, to me, maybe says more about the center position than it does about the left guard position, where we did see Bryce Effner play. We also saw Effner late at right tackle. But, you know, this isn't a spot where you can safely say, hey, this is clearly the five that are fitting us best. When you're examining Penn State and you're trying to point out red flags for a 4-0 team, you are very quickly compelled to look at the interior of this offensive line.
Yeah, to me, I just assumed that Juice Scruggs was the long-term answer at center. I mean, not necessarily this year, but eventually I figured he was going to be the guy who lands there.
Well, he still could. I mean, Wilson's a one-and-done situation.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just it would seem to me, if that was the case, that you would want Juice getting more snaps at center. So it's one of those things where we probably – maybe sometimes we read way too much into stuff. Sometimes we don't read enough into it. But, hey, what better place to read too much into stuff than in the Lions 247 podcast?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, speaking of reading into the stats a little bit, which I was doing as you were speaking there a bit, 509 total yards, 429 of them through the air for Penn State. Why don't we get into that a little bit here, Mark? Because Sean Clifford, 19 of 26, 401 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. It wasn't involved really in that fourth quarter. So again, the stats could have been much, much, much more incredible, I guess, is the way to say it. But Taquan Roberson, by the way, and that entire kind of backup situation that we were excited to see and we thought we might get a long look, did not come together in the way James Franklin had hoped. He actually said he spoke in the locker room afterward, and just kind of feeling like that the developmental group that came in, the depth group that came in, it didn't hold the standard that was played with earlier in the game. He felt like that standard wasn't met. So he sounded disappointed. I'm not going to say that's Taquan Roberson, but overall, you didn't really see that unit that came in and had, you know, 10, 15 minutes of playing time, you know, do its job at a high level that really turned your head. We're going to go back. We'll take a look. I'm sure there were some individual guys who stood out and that will stand out when we get a chance to see that. But overall, you look at a team that gave up a couple touchdown drives at the end. The starting defense did not do that. And then the offense, there was nothing that really stood out late. You avoided disaster when Tank Smith had that fumble that was recovered and was going to make a 38-24 there all of a sudden. That was overturned because he was down. But aside from Lovett, you know, bouncing off a couple tackles late in the game, there really wasn't any major highlights. And I thought going into this game, we'd come out with some nice stories about a guy who scored a late touchdown or someone who came on strong in the fourth quarter. Just wasn't that kind of game. And it wasn't that kind of a game week for Penn State based on what we hear, how they practiced and how they handled the Auburn win. And again, that happens. It's not the dream scenario for you today. So it's a lot to build off of without taking a loss.
Yeah, two things. From the positive standpoint, obviously Sean Clifford, I thought played another really, really good game. And the amazing stat to me, Dotson and Washington combined 12 targets, 12 catches, 265 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, that is some go-to receiver material. Right,
that's
there.
Like Chris Carter, Randy Moss, old school stat line. That's really impressive.
And for Clifford to, one of the issues that Clifford had the past couple years, at least in my view, and I don't know if our listeners and viewers will agree with this, but it sure did seem like he would tend to lock on to certain receivers, not just in a game, but for an entire season. And probably with good reasons, when you had guys like KJ Hamler and Dotson last year and to a lesser extent, Freiermuth. Well, now he's got those two guys, but he's also spreading the wealth. And I think that's really good. That's on the positive side. On a little bit of the other side of the ledger in that fourth quarter, I think when James was being critical of not living up to the standard, how I was reading that, I thought that was more about the defense. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'll have to go back and
look into it. Earlier on, he said our first team defense gave up 3 points. He wanted to make that very clear to us.
But if you look at the numbers, Villanova, fourth quarter, 8 first downs, 14 points, 178 yards, 10 of 11 passing for 138 yards. Again, these are guys who are playing hard, you know, getting after it, not giving up. And not that anybody expected them to. I think everybody expected them to play hard and do that. But even as your backups, you know, you got to do a little bit better job than that. Going back to what you said earlier, kudos to the first team defense. They did an outstanding job, only gave up 3 points. And those three were after what I thought, and I'll have to go back and look at it a little more closely, but I thought that roughing call was a little dicey, not anything remotely compared to some of the stuff we saw last week. But yeah, the starting defense was terrific. But those backups, you know, those young guys, you want to see them get in there and play with confidence and do well. And listen, maybe this is just part of the learning process for them. There were some true freshmen out there, but when they get their opportunity in that sort of situation, you're waiting for it. You're waiting for it. You're waiting for it. When you're in their shoes, you got to step up and get it done. And that's why I liked Franklin's, his tone after the game.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
He was mentioned again. That was another thing that he mentioned without us really grilling him on it. So you can see where, go back to what I said earlier. You could see where these are going to be a tough few days of practice. Well, I mean, Sunday will be tough. Monday they don't practice. And I'd imagine Tuesday is going to be a tough practice just to get them to where they need to be with Indiana coming to town. Now, having said all these things that we're talking about, in my eyes, I'm not thinking any differently overall about this team. The only area that really stands out to me that I think they have to absolutely get moving is the running game, because I think overall they're still, this is still a top 10, top five team.
I don't think you can win the Big Ten without a legitimate running game. You don't need to have the best running game in the Big Ten to win the Big Ten, but you can't have one that is highly inefficient and ineffective, particularly between the tackles. The perimeter stuff has worked well, but it's also working well in this case against an FCS opponent. And, right. and so we got to keep that in mind. By the way, just to put in context how strong this defensive effort was today, and that continues the theme for them early in the season. I took note when Arnold Ebikadi came up with his latest sack late in the third, early fourth, right before they started to bring in those backups. And this was really the final defensive stand up for the first team. It forced the Wildcats' seventh punt. And at that point, Villanova had 104 total yards. They were averaging 2.7 yards per play. And Penn State had built a 31 going on 38-3 lead. So defensively, there's not really a lot to poke holes in. I continue to see PJ Mustipher look every bit the kind of interior defensive lineman that you hoped he could be back in 2018 in that recruiting class when he was a top 10 prospect there. Brandon Smith did a nice job setting the tone early with a really hard hit. I thought Derek Tangelo did well for himself, was in the backfield a bit. Someone late in the game, I will say, the one young guy that I kind of noticed a couple of times and said, okay, Kobe King. Every time he's gotten a chance to really get out there, you pick him up off the field. And it's not easy to do when it's 22 guys and it's late in a blowout. It's not easy to jump off the field. For some reason, he just seems to be a little bit more in tune with knowing where he needs to go and getting there than a lot of the other guys that were out in that scramble. And that's a lot of what we heard about him. And I think that's excellent for the future of Penn State at linebacker in that box role, because they're going to need to fill some things moving forward.
Yeah, I also liked how they were rotating some young guys in early in the game. I mean, Izzard was in there. Vanover was in there. I'm forgetting who else was on the D-line.
Remember that three-man front? Vanover was inside. He's a defensive end. And then it was okay. Well,
he wasn't in that. Yeah, but he was in early, but he wasn't in that three-man front.
Oh, Vanover. I thought we saw Vanover inside with Ebikadi and Lucchetta bookending.
No, yeah, I was confusing myself and you. I had mentioned Vilbert. Vilbert was not in
there. The game moves fast in the press box.
Yeah,
not a lot of replays.
But they did rotate a lot of those guys in, I think, knowing. And another pretty cool stat from that game, 24 different Penn State players had at least one tackle. Nobody had more than four. So they were kind of spreading the wealth defensively. And I think that speaks to the way they were rotating guys in early. But again, in that fourth quarter, you want those young guys as a group to step up and have some success. And they didn't really have it in that game. So we'll see how it is going forward. You know, when's the next time they'll be in a position to get that many minutes? We'll see. But, I think they're going to ride those guys a little bit in practice this week.
Yeah. And we will, it's going to be interesting because this week Franklin could have given his guys an out in some ways along the way in that press conference, and he didn't. I think he wants the heat to be cranked up a little bit on them. He's going to apply it himself, but I think he has this mantra. He's told us he wants his team to grow from being uncomfortable. And that's when, when he made his great to elite speech, that's what he says. It's about that. It's making his team feel uncomfortable so they can grow from that. And I think he's making his team feel uncomfortable this week. They need to. They're a team that came in with a lot of questions, and they can't pretend that they've answered all of those questions just because they're 3-0. But again, you're 4-0 right now. You're not going to plummet in the rankings just because you only beat Villanova by 21 points. The things that we're talking about that are issues here locally will be discussed. But unless you were glued to that Penn State game, you're not really going to know a lot of what problems are arising. You're going to look at the final score. You're going to look at the stat sheet and say, whoa, Sean Clifford balled out, and look what Jahan Dotson and Parker Washington did. And the last thing I want to hit on here, we have a bunch of episodes coming up next week. We'll take another look at this game, final look at this game on Monday. But Mark, I wanted to point out something special that Keandre Lambert-Smith did. And it's special for him because I wrote earlier, right after that game one, where he had a big catch in the game against Wisconsin in the second half, his mentality has changed. He said again today he was mentally weak last year when he got to campus. We're talking about an All-American player, a top 200 overall prospect, who was as confident as anyone I've ever seen on a high school field. in retrospect a year later saying that he was mentally weak because he wouldn't let plays go after they happened. You saw today the first incomplete pass that Sean Clifford threw in about 40 minutes of game action went off the hands of Keandre Lambert-Smith. He was open, but he had to go really high. He had to extend for that ball. Not going to act like it was an easy catch, but he said he talked to himself internally, said he was gentle about it, not angry with himself. He tries to be gentle with himself. And what happened later in the game? 83-yard touchdown. He ended up with a couple catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. But when he's cooking and you got Dotson, Parker, Washington doing their thing, I still have major concerns about what happens beyond them at wide receiver if they got to go that route at some point. But that's a trio that you saw today. That's something that's really exciting, and that's something that, let's face it, we hadn't seen a lot of this kind of a performance where it's everybody involved with the quarterback. Mike Yurcich is making an imprint here. You don't see it all over the place yet, but I think this is one area where you're certainly seeing, you know, major forward momentum in a hurry.
Yeah, if you're one of your bigger concerns is settling on a fourth receiver, you know, especially when you have Dotson and Washington, because to me, those guys are both performing at – Dotson's performing at an elite level. Washington is right there, and now Lambert-Smith, you can see where he's getting – what maturity on that kid's part?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Franklin told us that he basically went to the kid and told him that, you know, you have to be more – you have to be more mature. And the kid's like, yeah, okay, I do. And he did it.
Yeah.
So to be able to do that, I think it really says something for him. And
Taylor Stubblefield, kudos to him, because I know he has meant everything in that growth for Keandre Lambert-Smith. And if you've heard Taylor Stubblefield talk, he gets on these guys when he needs to, but he's a calming presence when I'm on a Zoom call with him. So,
yeah. One other thing I wanted to point out, it's because it seems as if it happened like 3 days ago,
mm-hmm.
but huge commitment on the field.
Yes.
For Penn State. And I mean huge, like literally in Mega Barnwell, recommitting, I guess. Is that that's the better way of putting it? You know,
doesn't happen often.
Yeah. And I mean, Micah Parsons did it. You know, will this guy have that kind of impact? I don't know. He's obviously on a different side of the ball. But I could just tell you, having been down there on the field after the game, he gave Franklin a big hug and then was walking off the field, and people were like, oh, congratulations, Mega, for committing. He's gigantic.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, like you look at Theo Johnson, and Theo Johnson is huge. That Mega is – that is the absolute right name for him. But to keep the recruiting momentum rolling, even with a guy from the next class, I just think that was a real positive for Penn State. And this new trend of guys committing on the field is kind of keeping us on our toes, isn't it?
Yeah, and Andre Roy committed to end this previous week. I know we've got some recruiting talk to catch up here in the podcast. I promise we're going to do that. Mr. Fitz will be back. We'll break all that down. But, yeah, Barnwell, I mean, good point. We almost went through the whole show. Man, before the game, you had the camera focus there, and, wow, it's pretty cool to see it come full circle, because, again, I've covered recruiting for a while now, and it very rarely happens. Often you'll hear, hey, I'm decommitting, but I'm going to keep you in consideration. I have a great relationship with the staff. Maybe you get a hat on the table, but very rarely is it really coming full circle. Still got a ways to go with him. You got to get him to signing day next year. Right. But this is a guy who committed to you in the thick of the pandemic last year before his sophomore season. We're talking about a guy who is a four-star tight end, but I'm telling you, 6'5" at least, 270 pounds at least. Looks like a potential first-round pick at an offensive tackle at the age of 21, 22 years old. To me, that's a conversation between him and the staff, and either way, I think it's a tremendous add for Penn State as they get rolling in 2023 a bit. And Mark, I said Keandre Lambert-Smith was the last guy I wanted to mention. I do want to mention this. Really cool, again, to see Marquise Wilson. A couple catches today, 26 yards, and then Penn State punts the ball, I believe. He stays in the field, lines up at cornerback. You just don't see that. And I thought it was really cool. It was, you know, kind of in the middle of a blowout, late in a blowout, but just seeing him catch the ball during a series and then stick around to play cornerback, that's different. And there's something different about Marquise Wilson. And I think as the season moves forward, we're going to see a lot more of this kid.
Yeah, he caught a punt too. I mean, he was back there fielding a punt. So, yeah, I mean, he could do anything. I nearly put on the board. I joked about this with you in the during the game. I nearly put on the board that Wilson is in that center, you know, in our in-game thread, meaning Eric Wilson. And I'm thinking, geez, yeah. Everywhere that Marquise Wilson is playing, people may think I mean Marquise Wilson is playing center. I'm joking, obviously. But, yeah, it's that's so much fun to see, isn't it? I mean, we just see it so little anymore. And to have him out there, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. And we had a chance to talk to him after the Auburn game. Outgoing guy, really fun to talk to. So it's going to be fun to track him as the season goes along.
I'd like to know how Micah Parsons feels about it. That's the one guy I'd like to ask about that issue, because
there's a lot of guys though. Because remember on Wednesday we talked to Castro Fields, and somebody said, "What position would you like to play on offense?" And he had a good answer. He said quarterback, which would be really funny, and wide receiver. But Castro Fields was a good wide receiver. I mean, all these guys, all these defensive backs were probably good wide receivers in high school. But to see somebody be able to do it at this level, where you have to spend a certain amount of time practicing with both positions during the week, that's a very difficult thing to do. And I think it not only speaks to his athletic ability, but also his intelligence. I mean, that is an awful lot to absorb.
Yeah.
I think both of those things and returning kicks. I mean, again, this isn't like high school where you can just out athlete everybody. You have to know what the heck you're doing. And clearly this kid is intelligent enough. Not only is he gifted athletically, but he's intelligent enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, I've got a story in the works for this upcoming week about Marquise Wilson and what his teammates say it takes to get to be able to actually do this in a game at the Power 5 level. I hope to share that with you all in a few days. But a conversation that I think we'll keep having as his role expands. Look, a lot of positives here, maybe more negatives to dwell on and talk about than we anticipated going into the matchup. But we're moving forward to cover Penn State at 4-0. So a lot to like about that when you look around college football. And, you know, Indiana comes to town, and buckle up, because that is the first of 8 consecutive conference games. You get one bye week in the mix there. But this is where you show what you are if you're Penn State football and if you're everybody across this conference. A lot to learn, learning a little bit more today, maybe some concerns. But, Mark, thanks for jumping on. Really, really do appreciate it every time. And we'll get Mr. Fitz back on this upcoming week. And we hope he enjoyed his 4A away from Beaver Stadium today.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes for him with watching the Ryder Cup. I didn't see what happened today, but hopefully he has a good ending to watch tomorrow, because obviously it's been a lot of fun so far, and always happy to pitch in and help when I can.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll come home with some stories. We'll be back here on the Lions 24/7 podcast with 4 new episodes next week for Indiana matchup on Saturday. It's a primetime game, 7:30 kickoff in Beaver Stadium. Be sure, wherever you're listening to us, that you're also watching us on YouTube. We're over 800 subscribers in a hurry, so we really appreciate that. Lions 24/7 channel over at YouTube. On behalf of Mark Brennan, thanks to our producer, Lance Glynn. We'll talk to you real soon. I'm Tyler Donahue. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.